And now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines and simple keywords. And Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena. It is Oscar season.
I was going to say happy Oscars Day. It's unfolding in the City of Angels as we speak. I still get excited about it. It is the Oscars.
Yeah, a lot of good contenders out there, you know.
You don't think Oppenheimer is going to win everything?
Oh, it's just a bit of a too obvious of a nomination. Killers of the, what's it? Killers of the, oh God.
The Martin Scorsese movie?
Yeah, Killers of the Flower Moon, was it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Killers of the Flower Moon, I think it was.
In case you guys are wondering, Adam does have a computer right in front of him. Yeah.
Yeah, Killers of the Flower Moon, that's the one. That was also a good movie as well. Four Things, apparently, another good nomination. I'm yet to see it. I will be doing so soon, though. Yeah.
Okay. Happy Oscars season. We've talked about this short list. It's unfolding as we speak. They just rolled out the red carpet. So if we have any updates, maybe we'll share during the show. Okay, Adam, how about we get started with keyword news, because we have a lot of grounds to cover here as well. We're going to begin with the government plans to fill the medical vacuum with military doctors, our first keyword of the day.
Military doctors.
So due to the ongoing medical strike, government is reinforcing the emergency medical system by deploying military and public health doctors, and starting from today, that is. What's the latest on this front?
Right, so 20 military doctors and 138 public health doctors will be sent to 20 hospitals for the next 4 weeks. Now, that timeline alone goes to show that the government thinks that this kind of medical crisis will be prolonged, at least for a month. Now, this move aims to fill the gaps left by residents and thus, of course, alleviating the burden on the healthcare system. Now, the health ministry is also quickly sending out warnings about license suspensions, as it has been warning of, to trainee doctors who haven't returned to work. This process started last Tuesday, and it is expected that notifications for around 10,000 trainee doctors will be finished soon. Now, a check by the ministry found that just under 12,000 resident doctors from 100 training hospitals had not yet returned to work. That makes the rate of absence at just under 93%. Now, those who receive a notice have until the 25th of this month to respond. If doctors avoid these notices, the government plans to send more to make sure that they get them. Medical school professors are also protesting against the government's plan to increase medical school admissions. They had a meeting to discuss solutions to the current standoff between the medical community and the government, but they didn't really come to a clear decision or solution. They are also calling on the government to cease its threats towards residents and urging for dialogue between the government and the medical community to find a viable solution to the crisis. But no such kind of moves from either side in terms of any kind of, you know, sense of dialogue being engaged is currently the situation now. So, yeah, it's going to be a bit prolonged as expected, but we'll have to see if any resolution is made, but looks unlikely.
For now, the tug of war just remains absolutely tense, with neither side willing to budge, but they did sit down. I don't know if that's promising, but at least they're still willing to meet from time to time. All right, let's move on to our second keyword of the day.
Overwhelming response.
So South Korea's top military officer has visited some key locations to check how the Freedom Shield exercise between South Korea and the U.S. was going. Can you run us through what he said?
Right, so Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Kim Jong-soo, called for responding overwhelmingly against any enemy provocations. He made the call amid concerns of North Korean saber rattling during the exercise. There's hints of such saber rattling already. Now, Kim first visited the Army's second operational command in Daegu, where he was briefed on the exercise and discussed ways to effectively carry out joint rear area operations. He called on troops to maintain readiness in counterterrorism and coastline border operations. He then visited the 2nd Korea Air and Missile Defense Operations Center at the Air Combat Command in Daegu as well. The center is tasked with missile defense operations as part of the military's so-called three-axis deterrent system against the North. Just after this drill started, North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un was seen inspecting military drills as well, in a move seen as a counter to the Freedom Shield exercise. Additionally, GPS jamming warning signals targeting the West Sea Islands were detected from North Korea as well the day after the exercise began. So it is likely that we will probably see some military provocations from North Korea as these Freedom Shield exercises continue. So there you have it.
All right. Of course, what we're looking out for is the scope of the provocation. We'll be on the lookout for that. Let's move on to our third keyword of the day.
Finance chiefs meeting.
Because we need follow-up measures to the Camp David summit held last year. The finance chiefs of Korea, the United States, and Japan reportedly gearing up to meet for the first time next month in Washington, D.C. What can we expect?
Right. So, yes, as you mentioned, this meeting does follow an agreement from last August at Camp David when the leaders of the three countries met and decided to start such meetings. The meeting will include, of course, Finance Minister Choe Sang-mok, Janet Yellen from the U.S. and Suzuki Shunichi from Japan. Now, Seoul's finance ministry said the timing, venue and agenda of the meeting are being discussed by the three countries. They apparently chose Washington because at the same time, the IMF and World Bank will have their annual meetings there as well, which the ministers will also attend. The meeting between the three is expected to happen during that week. Now, before, Korea had meetings with just the US and Japan separately, so bilateral meetings, but not trilateral ones. Now, the meeting between Korea and the US occurred in 2016 and 2022. The meeting with Japan resumed last year, in fact, after a seven-year hiatus, marking the kind of easing in the strained relations between the two countries. Now, the agenda is likely to cover a variety of international financial issues, including enhancing the resilience of supply chains and restoring the multilateral trade order. There's also discussion about making this meeting a regular event, although no agreement has been reached on that just yet. Now, the ministers have expressed their anticipation for the meeting through various dialogues, highlighting the potential for economic cooperation among the three countries. Also, Choe is also slated to attend the Asian Development Bank annual meeting in Georgia in early May. He's also been invited to the G7 finance ministers meeting in Italy on May 23rd. Now, though Korea is not a G7 member, Italy, this year's G7 chair, extended the invitation nonetheless.
All right, so something to look out for. Now let's move on to our fourth keyword of the day.
Pension reform.
So nobody likes reform because it is painful and it is difficult, to paraphrase the president's words. Now, as the issue of pension reform does continue, though, a special committee at the National Assembly is starting to seek public consensus. Can we reach a consensus? I mean, just to from afar, wouldn't the older generation want something entirely different from the younger generation, to generalize a bit? But anyway, The move comes after they received a vague reform plan from the government last October, and now they're seeking some public review. What's the latest?
Yeah, so there was some criticism about that reform plan, wasn't there? Because it was criticized by critics of saying that it lacked a few key details regarding the pension reform plan. Now, since the end of January, they've been moving forward with gathering public opinions on the matter. Now, the committee has set up a group to deliberate on the issue, and after spending 3 days together, this group has come up with two main suggestions for pension reform. One suggestion is to increase the pension insurance premium rate to 13%, up by 4%, and the income replacement rate to 50%, up by 10%. Now, the other suggestion is to increase the insurance premium rate to 12%, which is up by 3%, while keeping the income replacement rate the same. Now, these suggestions were developed with input from 36 individuals, including workers, employers, and pensioners, and will serve as a foundation for discussions among a larger group of 500 citizen representatives. Now, the outcomes of these discussions will then be reported back to the Special Committee for final decisions. Now, currently, the income replacement rate for the national pension is 40% for 2028, and the insurance premium rate is 9% of monthly income. Now, the so-called pay more, receive more plan aligns with advice from a group of pension experts under the special committee. Conversely, the pay more, receive the same kind of plan suggests a compromise compromise that will focus more on financial stability of the national pension system, proposing a smaller increase in the insurance premium rate. So there's this kind of juggling and balancing act that's happening because, of course, the ultimate ideal goal is to have more retirees receive more pensions, but it is, of course, making the national pension coffers or putting a dent in the coffers of the national pension, which is kind of struggling financially as it is already. So there's that kind of issue to deal with as well. So what is kind of the middle ground is the question that's being answered or trying to be answered by this by the lawmakers. Now, additionally, there's a plan to extend the mandatory national pension enrollment age to 64 to match the age when people start receiving pensions, currently set to be 65 by 2033. At the moment, you pay pension until you are 59 mandatorily. So that extension of age is being discussed. Now, some propose keeping the enrollment and pension receiving ages as they are now. Public discussions on the issue will be televised, actually, live next month. So we'll probably, for those who tune in, we'll probably get a better picture of what kind of concerns are arising from this issue. Now, the goal, of course, is for the special committee to come up with a proposal agreed upon by both ruling and opposition parties before the end of the current National Assembly's term on May 29th. So we'll have to see what sort of proposals and resolutions they come up with in the National Assembly. So, yeah, we'll have to see.
And for our final keyword, we get a better observation of the state of the economy. Now, we might be doing better overall with overall numbers, but that's based on export recovery. What about domestic spending and struggling industries like construction and services? Our final keyword of the day.
Weak domestic demand.
So the KDI says Korea's economy is contracting slower as rebound in exports offsets weak domestic demand amid high interest rates. But again, domestically speaking, there are certain key industries that just never bounce back. It's doing worse, in fact. Can you tell us the details?
Right. So this is actually the fourth consecutive month the KDI has maintained this view since first mentioning the slowdown in domestic consumption in December last year as the downside of an easing economic downturn. Now, the downturn that dominated the first half of last year actually began to be seen as easing from October. Now, by the end of the year, the semiconductor industry especially started to recover and exports began to rebound. The growth rate is a bit less than before, but KDI explained that it's because there were fewer working days last month compared to the month before, of course, February, although it was a leap year, tends to have, of course, less working days. Now, semiconductors and automobiles maintained high growth rates, leading to a 13% jump in manufacturing production in the last month, followed by a 6% increase in the previous month. The ratio of shipments to inventory, which is an indicator of future business conditions, also increased, centered around semiconductors. However, as you mentioned, services and construction, closely linked to domestic demand, are still relatively sluggish. The production in the service sector increased by 4.4% from the previous month, but remained stagnant when adjusted for seasonality, showing only a 0.1% increase. Now, the ongoing high interest rates and high inflation as well continue to make it hard for people to, of course, spend and invest. Spending is still low, with goods spending going down and services spending barely increasing. After considering seasonal factors such as the Lunar New Year holiday in February, items sensitive to interest rates like cars and houses, for that matter, showed a weak performance. The consumer sentiment index in February stayed almost the same at 101.9, showing that high interest rates are still denting consumer confidence. The government said that consumer prices are projected to ease at a slower pace than expected before, reaching the target 2% by the end of 2024. So, yeah, they're still quite high at the moment. We'll have to see if they do ease by the end of the year. There's been similar kind of rosy projections before that haven't really come to fruition. So we'll have to see.
All right. Thank you very much, Adam, for today's coverage. Have a happy Oscars Day. We'll see you tomorrow.
You too. I'll certainly have my eyes on it. I'll see you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.